Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Ready? One, two, three, four!
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about, that's right, the Iditarod. We are a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio in Nome. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Before we jump into today's episode, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod 2018 comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
So today was the official restart of the 2018 Iditarod, and the clock is ticking. Mushers left Willow under sunny skies on their way to the finish line, the Burled Arch in Nome, roughly 1,000 trail miles away. The winner is expected about 8 or 9 days from now, and they will be vying for part of a total purse of about $500,000. No vying here on this end. Alaska Public Media and KNOM are teamed up yet again to bring you coverage of the last great race, and with the race underway, we're now in the midst of our daily episodes. The plan is to have a new installment every morning with the latest news straight from the trail. Those reports come to us from Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes, who, as we speak, is flying to Yentna and Squintna. That's the first two checkpoints. We also have KNOM News Director Davis Hovey heading out on the trail, but he doesn't leave for another couple days, so he's here again in the studio with me today. Hi, Davis.
Hey, Casey. Thanks for having me.
Just to recap, yesterday we had the ceremonial start in downtown Anchorage. It was kind of cloudy, but the weather was nice in the mid-20s. There were 1,000-something dogs. How many mushers again?
67, man. Woo.
That's a lot. Not as many as the most that they've ever had, but definitely a lot to try to keep track of. A lot of action. Dogs barking. PETA was there having a protest. One dog got loose, but it was actually found a short time later, which is good. Last year, a dog got loose and got hit by a truck.
Yeah.
And that was kind of sad, but this one was okay. Some other post-ceremonial start mayhem. The Anchorage Daily News reported that a musher's dog truck actually got in a wreck on the way from Anchorage to Willow, and they reported that that was Christy Barrington and her husband Andy Pohl, both of them running the race. Andy is a rookie this year. It sounds like everybody was okay. All 24 of their dogs were okay.
That's good.
They had to sort of scramble to get them up to Willow, and sounds like the truck was totaled.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
However, everybody was safe. That's the important thing, and they got their races underway today. It was snowing yesterday towards the end of the ceremonial start. Mushers and others were heading up to the Matsu Burrow. The Glen Highway outbound lanes from Anchorage north were actually closed for a time, and that may have maybe deterred some folks from heading up there for the restart today. But Davis, you and Zach were at the restart in Willow today. What was it like?
People came out in droves. I wouldn't say it was quite as busy as the ceremonial start, but it certainly was active. And not just people, but they brought their machines with them as well. Snow machines, in fact, driving all alongside the trail markers marked off with orange tape on the right and left side of the lane that each musher was departing in their chute as they left the starting line in Willow. And for Zach and I, it was a clear, sunny day, beautiful weather, probably in the low 20s, I'd say again, no snow. And it actually got a little bit warm on the frozen Willow Lake there.
There were some like food trucks and things like that.
Yeah, lots of food trucks, some barbecue, some crabs, some seafood, you know, the usual works. And then also a large collection of more fur hats and other things, of course, that are typical Iditarod attire.
So tell me about the actual start. This is when the clock is really ticking for the mushers. How did that go?
We've got a staggered start, which they do every year, I'm told. It started right immediately at 2 p.m. on the dot, not a second later, not a second before. The first musher is kind of lined up under the starting line. The next musher in line behind them is guided into the chute where they form up single file right behind the first musher. And then the first one is off, Cody Straith of Fairbanks. And then they have 2 minutes to get the next musher up into that same starting position. They read through their bio, and the announcer gives them a time update, 1 minute, 30 seconds, and then the final 10 seconds, we get that countdown, and as soon as it hits zero, they're off.
So the Iditarod talked about having added security at checkpoints and at the ceremonial start and at the restart. Did you see anything like that today?
Zach and I, as media reporters, you know, we each have our own badges. They're orange in color and just reflect our media credentials. And so we're allowed to access all these different areas. In general, we went down to the race restart area. And again, like I said, there's different zones marked off by this orange tape. And so we're trying to get into this one zone where all the mushers and their trailers are set up with their teams as they're staging for the restart. And we got stopped by some Iditarod security officials who said, "We're not letting anyone else in, even media, at this point, because we want to allow the mushers to stay focused and not distract them this close to the race restart."
But Zach got in, and he got an interview with somebody. We'll get to that here in a second. So how did that go down?
Zach has some buddies in the mushing community, and so he was able to, as we were walking the perimeter, he was able to find someone that he recognized and who knew him, and he essentially was gifted their musher handler badge and just kind of slipped down on his arm and slipped through the fence. So there you go.
And one person that is notably absent from the race this year is former champion Dallas Seavey. We talked about why in the second episode of the podcast. It's related to a dog doping scandal. And if you haven't heard that, maybe go back and check that out. But his wife was actually at the restart today. That's Jen Seavey. And that's the person that Zach talked to. And he had this interview with her.
Yeah, well, so I grew up on a ranch in Montana, and I had no access to sled dogs. I'd never seen a sled dog in my life, but ever since I was 4 years old, I was obsessed with moving to Alaska and racing Iditarod dogs. And we were a Catholic family, and one day in the mailbox, we got a letter from KNOM, which was the Alaska Nome Radio Mission. I was 5 years old. It was 1993. And I was so excited because it said Nome, Alaska on it, because that's where I was going to mush dogs. So I started sending them my allowance, which was $5 a month. And after several months, the priest that was in Nome, I wrote them little letters about how I was sending it to them because I had dreams of mushing a dog team to Nome. The priest sent me the Iditarod race guide for 1994. And it was one of my most treasured possessions. And a couple years ago, I was going through all of my old stuff, and I pulled that out of this old crinkled envelope, and I was flipping through it, and there's a picture of Janine Seavey, who is currently my mother-in-law, in the mini convention center in Nome, and she was waiting for information on where Mitch was on the trail. And everything just came full circle.
And how long did you send your allowance to KNOM in Nome?
Years. Yeah.
Davis, you work for KNOM now. How do you feel about taking Jen Seavey's allowance when she was a little kid?
Well, first of all, she started giving in 1993. I wasn't even born then, but that is fantastic to hear. Man, that is such a beautiful story, I think, for KNOM listeners and myself as an employee. I think, you know, it really truly reflects how much of an impact that KNOM has, and great job on them for advertising and reaching her family in Montana randomly in the mail. And we somehow, KNOM somehow sparked an interest in her, as she mentioned, because she was also thinking about Iditarod. And $5 doesn't seem like a lot from a five-year-old kid, but at the same time, you know, those $5 adds up. And Zach's right, it does go towards my salary. It goes towards the staff that we keep at KNOM. So I mean, that's a blessing for all of us. So it's a really cool story.
It helps keep the volunteers going there who have a place to stay. And tell me, we have a former KNOM volunteer in the race this year.
That we do. Tara Cicatello out of Buffalo, New York, originally. She was a KNOM volunteer in 2013 and 14, I believe. She kind of stuck around in Nome a little bit after that, got her first mushing experience in Nome while she was a volunteer. And then, you know, after a couple of years and meanderings through Big Lake and Kristen Bacon's kennel, she's now racing her own team, or racing a team that she has worked with herself and kind of fundraised to bring into the Iditarod for her rookie year in 2018.
It's pretty cool how all this interest in the race kind of comes around, like Jen said, full circle. And you've got people that just, when they heard about it when they were a little kid, they're actually in the race. Like, she's out there right now mushing as we speak. It's pretty cool to hear. And when you guys are out there on the trail, we are going to be taking questions from our listeners and posing them to you to answer. We take those by email and by voice memo. If you can open up your voice memo app on your phone, record it, send us your question, and it's sort of your chance to get on the podcast yourself. We will, of course, still take the regular text email, but the voice memos, because we work in radio, we really appreciate those. You can send those to iditarod@alaskapublic.org, and we will do our best to try to answer those questions. And here is today's question.
My name is Penny, and I wonder how the mushers take a comfort break.
How the mushers go to the bathroom.
She said comfort break. There aren't a whole lot of comfort breaks out on the trail. Just in general, they
certainly not.
They will find a place to sleep for comfort where they can. Sometimes it's just in their sled, in their sleeping bag, or passed out on the floor of the checkpoint building. But she was talking about going to the bathroom, I think.
And yeah.
There are no bathrooms out there. How much do you know about this, Davis?
You know, to be honest, Casey, not a whole lot. I mean, I assume just like when you're out camping in the wilderness and you have no access to any sort of facilities, you bring a shovel, maybe your own two-ply, and dig a hole.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. Of course, I don't know how well you can dig a hole in the middle of a frozen tundra trail, especially when it's, you know, 20, 30 degrees below zero.
One thing to think about here, too, is that if you have your team all lined out and hooked up to your sled and you need to go, you need to hook that to something. They have snow hooks that hopefully if the trail is of the right consistency, you can plant that hook and they'll stay, but they might want to try to tie that to something. It's not maybe the best timing to go to the bathroom. The dogs, sometimes they get into fights. They're not that well behaved. You can't just tell them to sit and stay like you would maybe a well-trained house dog that you have. I have a kind of funny story that's related to this. In 2014, I was covering the race and flying along in a helicopter every day. And I'd gotten to the point where I wasn't too afraid of the flying part. I mean, you look up at the rotors and you think, like, that's what's holding us up in the air all the time. We had stopped in the checkpoint of Caltag, the village of Caltag on the Yukon River. And we had taken off and we had been flying along for a little ways and we were approaching Unalakleet. We were just about to get out to the coast. The race is really heating up.
Yeah.
It was starting to get real interesting. And the pilot said, I think I'm going to have to put it down. And there was a pause and the photographer and I, Bob Hollinen, who works for the Anchorage Daily News, we looked at each other and the pilot said, I think I'm going to puke. And he had to land this helicopter because he had gotten food poisoning and put it down on the tundra nice and gently. He flipped some switches to kind of shut it down. And then he opened the door and he fell out onto the tundra and vomited. And he had to sort of stop doing what he was doing there to flip some more switches and really shut the helicopter down because the rotor was still spinning with Bob and I just sitting in the helicopter. And then he grabbed some toilet paper and he went over to a stand of trees and the food poisoning continued. And, you know, that guy toughed it out for another couple days. He looked terrible. And we were worried, you know, just that he wasn't going to be able to eat and sort of, you know, stay hydrated. But he really did a good job of being a professional and getting us through that. So I'm not going to say his name because I don't think he would want me to do that. But just another story of, you know, when you got to go, you got to go. And it doesn't matter if you're flying a helicopter or mushing a dog team. That's just how it is.
That's right. Mother Nature calls us all.
The call of nature. The call of the wild.
Yep.
Of course, when you're mushing, there are checkpoints along the ways, and hopefully there are bathrooms in these checkpoints. We've seen some of the first mushers on their way from Willow to Yentna and Squintna already pass through Yentna.
Yeah, 42 miles already down the trail. Yeah.
Some of those front runners. Tell me, as we're taping this here, it is Sunday night, about 7:30. Who have we seen make it to Yentna and make it out of Yentna so far?
Yeah, so Cody Strath, bib number two, who left in first position from the race restart in Willow, still maintains his lead. But we saw some interesting jumps early on based on the leaderboard. Linwood Fiedler, who started somewhere around eighth, I believe, as a bib number position, he got into second position after leaving Yentna, or by arriving into Yentna, and then now he's currently resting on the trail. So the GPS tracker is showing all kinds of early changes, but still, in terms of our front runners, it's still pretty much the way they left Willow.
Yeah, and this is where things really haven't shaped up yet. The strategies may start to become apparent in the next couple of days, whether mushers are going to kind of bank rest for later on in the race, like Mitch Seavey does, some other mushers do, or whether they're going to make real long runs here at the beginning of the race and try to build the lead. We just don't know yet. So, like I said, Zach Hughes is headed to Gintna and Squintna. Hopefully we will have more reports from him on the podcast tomorrow. Check in later for that. Thanks, Davis Hovey, for being here in the studio with me. We will be back tomorrow morning with another podcast on the Iditapod. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. And until next time, happy trails. It's not maybe the best timing to go to the bathroom or the woods as it answer the
when is the best time really though, Casey? Is there a right
stumbling
time
over this because it's just so goofy to begin with.